Hi, Sydney.
Good morning, Carl.
How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Well, welcome to the podcast,
Thank you.
Life and Biography. And we're going to be discussing your wonderful book, The Brothers Mankiewicz, which has a great subtitle. I have to look at the book because I can't remember. Hope, Heartbreak, and Hollywood Classic. Before we talk specifically about the book, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I had written all of one biography before of Gloria Steinem, which is how I got to know you, Carl, because I joined a biography seminar of which you were part. And before that, I had written a book, Toyland, the High Stakes Game of the Toy Industry, which I had come out of a business journalism background. So I had started with Toyland, and I loved writing the narrative parts of that. And so my agent suggested that I write a biography of Gloria Steinem next because I was such an avid feminist. And once I did one biography, I was committed. I love writing biography.
Good to hear. And how do you get from Gloria Steinem and toys to the
Well, you know the answer to that, Carl, because you are behind
Mankiewicz
it.
brothers?
You had become the editor of University Press of Mississippi's Hollywood Legends series and sent an email to some biographers you knew saying they were interested, you all were interested in submissions. I had never written about Hollywood, and it's a huge area, a huge subject, and I always tell people to take on a Hollywood, old, especially classic Hollywood biography, to me was kind of like writing about a New York Yankee. People who have baseball knowledge and other kinds of knowledge like that have so much knowledge. And so I didn't know if I could take it on. So it took a lot of catch-up research to feel grounded in that field and in that history.
And why the Mankiewicz brothers specifically? And before you answer that question, unless my memory is playing tricks, didn't we once meet by chance in the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences?
I don't remember that. Oh,
I
didn't
don't
we
either.
run into each other?
It might be a memory I made up. I'm not
Well,
sure.
I think I was already on this book when the bio conference was out in LA. And so if we were both out there at that point, we could have run into each other both doing research.
Yes, we
Library.
were. Yeah,
That
we were both
is
at that conference.
that's right. I remember seeing you and you were, yes, I remember where we were in the in those that Rolls Royce of libraries, right? It was
Yes.
oh.
Yeah. So the Mankiewicz brothers, how come?
Well, when you sent this email and I started thinking about subjects, I didn't want to do an actor. I wanted to do somebody creative behind the scenes. Both the toy book and Gloria were somewhat about creativity. And so I started looking into that. I knew about Herman both because of Citizen Kane, but also because I had interviewed Frank Mankiewicz for my Gloria biography, and fortunately quoted him in very positive ways because I had to go on and interview him for this book.
Oh,
And
sure.
so I read a 1978 biography of Herman, and that led, and I really liked him and I liked the idea, but that book led me to the 1978 biography of Joe. And when I finished that, I thought, I think the whole is greater than the sum of the two parts, and that would be really interesting. So I ran it by you, and you thought it was a great idea, and then proceeded from there.
I don't remember whether I said this to you or not, but when I took over the series, it was originally proposed by, I believe it was Ronald Davis, a film historian. And he had written on a couple of actors, Zachary Scott, for example, for the series. And it had been exclusively actors, and I thought, I'd really like to expand this series. So you were part of the expansion.
Oh, that's good to know. Well, I actually corresponded with Ronald Davis because he wrote on Linda Darnell, who was he was
That's
from
right,
Texas,
yeah.
and Linda Darnell was from Texas, and he did a wonderful oral history of her, and we went back and forth, and so I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was very encouraging, and he wrote me a nice letter after he retired, and I told him I was taking over. So he got the series off to a good start, and we've we've had other expansions. Carol Easton's book on Goldwyn, which was published some years ago. I convinced the press to reprint that. So it's it's worked out well, I guess I would say. Now, I remember when you were researching and writing this book, one of your big concerns was, how do you write about two figures? They're brothers, so that's obvious. But I mean, there's certain management, narrative, and even research questions, I think, involved, aren't there?
There were huge questions. And along the way, I questioned my own decision to do that. And why did I sign this contract to do the book about the two of them? For in my specific case, the biggest issue, which I'm sure I complained to you about because I complained to everyone, was a huge imbalance of material that I had on the two brothers. Joe, first of all, he lived 40 years longer than Herman, and he had a much more important body of work. In his personal life, he had three wives and many affairs with people like Joan Crawford and Judy Garland. And his widow lived near me and made his diaries accessible to me, and his papers were at the Herrick, and they were voluminous. So I had all kinds of primary material, plus a greater wealth of material to begin with. Herman, who died in 1953, left a much sparser body of work. He was basically a screenwriter and not a director, so you didn't really know whether what was on the screen was what he had intended. And it's harder to incorporate screenwriting into a biography. Anyway, you don't quote a script that much. It gets too boring. So yes. I often bewailed the fact, how am I going to write a book that feels like it's about two people? This is even before we get organized. This is just in terms of material. How will it not feel like a book about Joseph Mankiewicz and his brother Herman? So that was the material part of it. And then the structural part had its own challenges as well, which we can talk about or not. But yes, it was very...
Yeah, say a little bit more about it, because I think it's an interesting... People read a book and they say, oh yeah, that works. But what they don't realize is it takes quite a bit of thought to make it work.
Yes, well, structure to me is the most interesting part of all of my many... I mean, you've written thousands of books. I've written three, but each time... The structure is really interesting to me, and I think about it all the time. How am I going to make this work? And with the toy book, each third chapter was the running story of the development of a toy line, an action figure line. And so it was very complicated. And with a biography, of course, you have the chronology of the life. I mean, that's sort of the inherent structure, but you don't necessarily follow it. You know, there have been thematic books, there have been portions of life. And with my brothers, there was much less overlap than I was expecting. They're almost never in the same room in the book. Mm. They didn't really particularly work together on movies. And even if they contributed to each other's movies, saying a lot, you know, adding a line is not a scene or anything like that. So it was a structural challenge. And among the many rules, everybody, I think, sets rules for themselves. I said, you can never write meanwhile.
I like to say you can't write. It's like, meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Exactly. I couldn't do that. The other day I did a talk and I gave a summary of Herman. And then I turned to Joe and I said, you know, I'm not going to say meanwhile, but here is Joe. So, yes, there had to be graceful transitions back and forth. And the chapters where they were both part of a chapter, of which there were some, rather than just a reference, were the most challenging chapters to write, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you're raising a lot of issues. You know, as many biographies as I've written, for example, each one is a challenge in the sense that I feel like I'm, you know, it's starting all over again. You do learn certain things, of course, and you develop a certain confidence. But, you know, you said, for instance, well, how hard could it be? Someone might say, you know, you just follow the chronology. But the problem is there are gaps in the chronology. You know, there are certain parts of your subject's life that are well documented, maybe through interviews, maybe through letters, various documents. And then there are other parts where that's just not so.
Well, there's also the interesting versus not interesting, or important versus not important. And one of the issues I've been in discussions with other biographers about is, what happens when your subject's most important accomplishments are over and he or she or they live another 20 years? You know, what do you do with that? How much attention do you pay? And I paid very little attention, although I used that time to sum up certain things. But you know, it's not the every age doesn't deserve the same amount of treatment.
Sure. Now, how do you handle the fact that one brother dies and the other one lives so long?
Well, I divided it into sections, and I was so pleased with the publisher because physically, artistically, they had a, you know, a cover, sort of a title page for each section. It was there was a prologue that was in three parts: Joe, Herman, Pop, going backwards. And then there was the Herman section. There was the Mankiewicz Brothers of Hollywood section, and then there was Joe afterwards. And actually, conceptually, before I started, I had the idea that I wanted to make the book use a sort of a fiction technique. I think it was the book, The Three Junes, that used it, where you would be telling a story with one protagonist, and then later on in another section, you'd be telling the same material but from the another protagonist's point of view. And that's not practical, and it didn't really work, but there was a focus in that way. And Herman died in 1953. Joe died in 1993. So once I killed off Herman, it happened to have been Joe left Hollywood in 1951, but I kept that section through Herman's death, and then we went to Joe on his own.
That's good. Yeah, I think it worked well.
Well, it did back up in time a little bit. You know, that's one of those times where it's sort of like bump the needle of the record, if that's not
Yes.
too
Well,
obscure
so yeah, I
a
mean,
reference.
you're telling a story, and chronology isn't always the best way to do it, even in a biography. There can be this going back and forth. I think there can be flashbacks in a biography. When I was doing my Faulkner biography, I was reading all the other biographers, and they all seem to agree that his best work was between 1929 and 1942. I disagree somewhat with that. I think some of the later books are better than they've been given credit for. And I would just get dismayed. One biographer in particular would actually say, well, after 1942, Faulkner, wasn't as good a writer. And I'm thinking, how does the reader take that? Why doesn't the reader say, well, that's all I'm going to read of this biography? And you have to think of it as a biography of a whole person's life. And as important as the work is, that's got to be somehow absorbed into this telling of lives.
Yes, that makes sense. And as far as flashbacks go, I realized, sort of in retrospect, all my books start with a flashback. I love flashbacks, and so did the Mankiewicz brothers. So, you know, there are a lot of flashbacks in their movies. So I felt like I was related to them in that way.
Sure,
That was
yeah.
nice.
Something else I have to say about your book, and it sounds self-serving since I'm the editor of the Hollywood Legends series, but your book has been a tremendous success. I
Thank
mean,
you.
you've won awards. I mean, you've gotten reviews in places where the Hollywood Legends series doesn't always get reviews. Have you thought about that at all?
Are you
Why
kidding?
that's the case?
Well, what's been really interesting to me about of course, I love the prizes, and I just gave a keynote address for the one that it won the big prize, which was very humbling and amusing to me because I've never given a keynote address. I can't address, nor do I expect to ever give another one. And I used it to talk about the mechanics of biography and hoping that would be helpful. But what happened with the reviews, especially the major film critic and historian reviews, was that they concentrated so much on Herman and the making of Citizen Kane and the writing
Oh,
of
yeah.
Citizen Kane. And I was so concerned about what I perceived of as the potential imbalance. There's definitely more about Joe in the book. You know, there's more pages on Joe,
Sure.
deservedly so. But the those particular kinds of critics just keep zeroing back in onto Citizen Kane. I thought it was Citizen Kane. Other people have said to me it's that Herman is such a tortured character and he's so interesting to write about. But we all know reviews are a lot about the reviewer.
Yes, they are. And in fact, when I announced on social media that I was going to be interviewing you, most of the people said, well, you have to talk about Pauline Kael and Citizen Kane. And, you know, how does she feel about that? And we could talk about that a bit. But I said, you know, I'm really interested in this as a biography. After all, the podcast is called A Life in Biography. And that issue is, and I think you handle it well in your book. So I guess we need to say a little bit about the whole Citizen Kane issue and also about the movie Mank.
Okay, yes, it's really interesting. And thank you for the compliment. And that's a good example, by the way, of anachronistic placement, because the Pauline Kael controversy, which I should you know, give a framework. Citizen Kane was a 1941 movie. In early 1971, Pauline Kael, the New Yorker critic, the New Yorker published a two-part, 50,000-word screed by Pauline Kael about Herman, and basically asserting Herman wrote the movie, really disparaging Orson Welles and reducing him to kind of a credit hog. And it was because she was, I mean, people wouldn't necessarily realize this, but it's because she was feuding with Andrew Saris and the other auteur theory people. And she wanted to make the point that this was a studio system movie, not an auteur. And that's basically ridiculous. They both, and yes, Herman wrote the original screenplay, but it is the icon it is because of Orson Welles. So I didn't know where to put that material. You know, there's a Citizen Kane chapter that's taking place from 1939 to 1941. So what do I do with this that comes later? And that was a section that sort of traveled around my drafts before it went back into the Citizen Kane. So that's one of those times when you do go out of chronology, and I put it there. And I actually also had a very long note saying, here's some other treatment of this. There was a huge controversy in the critical community, and it's gone on to be part of the academic world. And here's some other references. And if you want to know more, here's a good place to start. I had a whole section of books on Orson Welles and Citizen Kane in my many shelves of Hollywood books, and wrote a lot more than I ended up. You know, Orson Welles is fascinating and captivating, and always threatens to take over any book he's in, I think, because he's so fascinating. So that was a challenge to handle. And the way if you want me to talk about the movie, I've been so annoyed. I've been so annoyed at the constant refrain of David Fincher's taking the Pauline Kael side. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I interviewed him. I did a piece on him and the movie, which was great fun. And I realized when I was interviewing him, I hadn't interviewed anybody for years. I've been interviewed, you know, to promote this book, but I didn't get to be the interviewer, which is much more fun because I don't know the answers. I know my answers, or I hope I do. I usually do. But he agreed. I mean, the thought that went through my mind when I saw it the first time was, this is like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, the Tom Stoppard movie. It's about an also player, a small player. Orson Welles is Hamlet.
Yeah.
Herman is Rosencrantz or Guildenstern. He's the little piece of this big story, but it's his story. He's the central character in his little piece of this big story. It seemed to me, and you know, I'm certainly very Herman oriented, that's what it was. And yet people persist in re-arguing something that I think was settled 50 years ago.
I guess that's why that was my impatience with it, that you're blowing it up into an issue and it's not really an issue anymore. And I think that's one of the things I like about the way you frame it in your biography is you certainly explain what Kael was about, but you also, in fact, you use the word tendentious.
Yes.
To describe. So you really set it up immediately, but then you begin to show, you know, how you simply can't accept that interpretation of, so much goes into a movie anyway. I mean, there's the writer who provides a template, but as soon as you get on the set, whether it's Orson Welles or not, if you look at a director like Howard Hawks, you know, Faulkner would write a screenplay and Hawks would turn it all around and he'd ask the actors, can you say that line and so on? And a lot of writers take umbrage, but Faulkner, in fact, said the film is much better because the actors and the director got to work on it.
Yes, and that's something I don't feel particularly equipped to judge. Herman wrote a screenplay, The Mad Dog of Europe, trying in 1933, trying to alert people to the threat of Hitler. And one of his grandsons, John Mankiewicz, who's a screenwriter and very experienced TV and writer himself, I got it from the Library of Congress, and I was going to make John, I made John a copy. And he said, is it any good? And I said, I can't judge that. You can judge that. But, you know, it seems pretty melodramatic to me, but it could be wonderful, perhaps.
Yeah. It's it all depends on how it plays out and whether you're giving enough for the director and the actors to work with. And, of course, judgments will vary on treatments and screenplays anyway. It just really depends on who decides to make it and produce it and so on. I wanted to ask you also, there are plenty of Mankiewiczes still around.
Yeah.
And you know, what your experience was with the family.
Well, I had never done a book about dead people. And living subjects always have family, but the most ticklish situation is the living subject. In this case, it was the family. And at that, the point when I started, Herman, who died in 1953, had left, he had two living children. He had a daughter who was born in 1937, and she had died in the 70s. But his two sons were alive and in their 80s, and I interviewed them a lot. And I interviewed Joe's, all four children of Joe's, and they, of course, remembered him well because he was their father. With Herman, I interviewed some of the grandchildren, but none of them knew Herman. They were all born after, I'm pretty sure John is the oldest. Yeah, so they were all born after Herman died. So they could talk about his wife and they could talk a little bit about Joe, but they didn't have direct knowledge. And I always say to relatives in particular, if you like every word that I write, I'm not doing my job. You know, this is going to be my view. And I feel like I need to do that in the very beginning. And so I wanted their input, but I also wanted to keep my distance.
Sure. Were they, to begin with, were any of them reluctant to talk to you?
Well, first of all, they were surprised. I mean, evidently the word was going around behind my back. Why would you want to write about us? And but the first reaction was also, we think our cousin, they're not in great touch with each other, although they seem to see each other on Twitter, et cetera. Our cousin's writing a book. We think, well, their cousin is Nick Davis, who is a grandson of Herman. He's a son of the daughter who tragically died in her 30s. Mm. He'd had a contract since about 2003 or something like that. So I called him and he said, you know, it was his life's dream to do this book and it is coming out next summer. And I'm looking forward to reading it. But what happened with my Gloria book was there was already a biography of Gloria in the works, and I had to make a decision. Am I going to do this anyway? And I came.
Right.
So just as reviews are much as much about the critic, I think a biography is a portrait of the biographer, too. It's what you bring to it. So I decided I would proceed. And so I did.
One other thing about working methods, I suppose, you know, there are some biographers, and I have never done this, they ask people to sign releases. Have you ever done that?
The only thing I had to do with releases was that the publisher wanted some, first of all, Herman's son was his literary executor, and Joe's wife, widow, was her, so I needed signatures on that. I haven't asked interview subjects, no. No, it's in here. I mean, sometimes an interview subject will say to you, I want my quotes checked or blah, blah, blah. And then in the Gloria Steinem biography, when she started fighting back and trying to change it, one woman, a relative, withdrew all her photographs. That happens. It's probably happened to you, too.
Yeah.
People calling and faxing me. This was before email. I didn't enter, you misinterpreted me because Gloria sent out the pages. It was a nightmare. That was quite
Oh,
something. And I joked after that one in biography, stick with the dead.
yeah, it is easier in some respects, unless you have a really fierce estate, which is sort of policing the whole territory. Well, now that the book is out, have you heard from the Mankiewiczes what they
Oh,
think of it?
yes. Oh, they love it. They it's been really fun for them. They've been very supportive.
Oh,
And
great.
Ben Mankiewicz, the host on TCM, had Alex Mankiewicz come from Australia, and me right before COVID closed everything down. We went to Atlanta and we had a Mankiewicz family weekend where we did intros and outros to seven Mankiewicz movies, and that was great fun. And Josh, oh yeah, they've all been really supportive and pleased. And I'm sure you found this also when you do the really hard research and you pin all kinds of actual facts down, it belies a lot of the legends or the mistakes that families thought, and they start turning to, when was that? When did this happen? Was this really
Exactly.
true?
Yes, that
Where's
happened
the
a lot.
sled for me? Where's the sled? Real sled?
With my Dana Andrews biography, he elaborated this myth. There was some truth to it, but he elaborated this whole myth about his first love and why he didn't marry her and so on. And I started to do some digging because parts of the story didn't quite make sense to me. But when you embrace something as a myth, you don't see the contradictions, and you certainly don't do research. And when I uncovered what the whole story was, which was a lot more complicated, the family was surprised, but also in a sense grateful. And in some ways, it was a better story than the one that he had told them. So
That's
I
so
think,
nice. I love
yeah, it's quite gratifying when the biographer, often people think of biographers as intruders or invaders and so on. And often they bring something, if there are family members, that they begin to see things that were mysteries to them or that they didn't know about at all.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the things. I think one of the most important aspects of research is as much as possible to use contemporaneous sources. I found that on all my books. When you go back to when it really happened, especially if it's something reported, and you see that, memories are faulty. All of our memories are faulty, but for that kind of, especially with much told stories, they're well-rutted paths, right? And you go
Yes.
back, you find out the errors are building on errors and so forth.
Yeah, I can imagine someone listening to this podcast who might be wondering, why is there so much this talk about interviewing and families and so on? And one of the things that I like to tell people about biography is provenance matters. That is, where you got this stuff, how you got it, how the whole thing was put together is really important, and it's one of the most disappointing. I don't know how you've reacted to the reviews of your book. I mean, they've been very good, but reviewers rarely treat a biography as something which is constructed. Instead, they treat it as content. They spend the whole review retelling the story of the subject's life, and then they maybe they'll say, "Oh, Sidney Stern did do a splendid job."
Well, I had right. I yes. I when one is looking for blurbs or things like that, where's the adjectives? Where are they? Can we get back to me here? Yes, especially with Citizen Kane, they wanted to engage and retell that whole story. I find that in book groups. I even find that in our biography group. I want
That's
to talk
right.
about process. Why are we telling Lyndon Johnson stories? Why can't we talk about, myth versus reality and things like that? Yes.
That's right.
I
Yeah,
had one
absolutely.
review where there were zero. They quoted me a few times. That was the New York Review of
Yeah.
Books. He reviewed the movie and my book, sort of, supposedly, but I
Yeah.
in vain. There was nothing negative, and what he quoted, I was treated as the authority on what really happened. That
Yeah.
was really okay. I'll take the provenance of that review.
Yeah. It's baffling. I don't
Yeah.
know what they think they're doing. I mean, to me, it's the easy way out. I've seen biographers do this. They'll write a review of a whole book, and you wonder, well, what actually did the what part did the biographer play?
Well, I think my theory sometimes is that a reviewer doesn't like your book, and they're too, they don't want to say anything negative, which is strange because a lot of people love to write negative things.
Yes, oh yeah.
It's fun to be negative at someone else's expense, but not always. I don't know. Again, with telling the story of the making of Citizen Kane, I think it was just something that people love to write about, I guess.
Seems to be, yeah, seems to be. Now, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want me to ask you?
Oh, that's such a hard question.
or anything you want to say that you haven't said?
No, if you wanted, we could relate it a little bit more to the movie. I mean, the experience of thinking, I will say, the experience of having these people in my head for 10 years, to the extent that the summer before, actually, this is another story about the family. The summer before it came out, the year before, I went back to LA because Lee and Ben Mankiewicz had come across some letters, and I actually used one or several in my book, and I went out there to get them, and they had a dinner party for me, and they had the cousins. They had all the Mankiewicz cousins that they could have. Uh-huh. I sat among them. So we're all on Earth at the same time, right? I'm not their age, but I wasn't with them. I felt like I was their grandparents looking down on them. I was so identified with Herman and Sarah, their grandmother at that point, that I saw them through their eyes. And it was really very touching. And when the movie came out, it was the same experience. The first time I saw the trailer, and black and white even enhanced that because it's like a dream, right?
Yes.
So they were up on the screen saying the words, the same words they say in my book. We were using a lot of the same sources. And it was really very touching. I choked up. I really did cry the first time I saw it. Now it's a movie. You know, now I see it as a movie.
Right,
but,
right.
But it's thrilling in that way also because David Fincher really did care about the truth as much as possible. And his Herman, Gary Oldman's Herman, is my Herman as much as it can be. And so that was very gratifying because we all know between your hard work and biography and the legend up there on the screen, the legend is what people are going to take away with your figures, and you're powerless to prevent that. So,
yeah, that's what John Ford said. Print the legend.
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful talking, Sydney.
Well, this was quite fun. And you were there at the beginning, Carl.
Yes, I was. And we're not going to call this the end. It's just maybe the end of the beginning.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.